Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
I'm muted.
Hi, and welcome to Mindshifter Radio. Michael's singing in the background there. Your host, Dr. Michael Rice, the Forgiveness Doctor, and I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice, and we also have Dr. Tim Hayes, and we welcome you to the show. Today's Tuesday, August the 11th, 2015. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us, and we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. Welcome, everybody. We're honored and delighted that you've chosen to join us today. Once again, to have this conversation about the first century Aramaic concept of forgiveness and how to bring that into expression in your life. We live in a culture that tells us that forgiveness is all about something we should do for somebody else, or maybe on occasion we should forgive ourselves. But we're here to offer that that has nothing whatsoever to do with forgiveness. We've been tricked. One of the most important tools in history has been removed from our culture because it's been made a backward process. We've been taught and brainwashed into forgiving each other, letting each other off the hook, because inside of our experience is some sort of pain or turmoil or trauma. And we're here to say, you never want to do that. Never, ever, ever do you want to do anything that even resembles such a thing. Because if you do, you'll be missing a powerful opportunity. And the opportunity that you'll be missing will be the one to engage in forgiveness. Because when you substitute pardoning for forgiveness, you miss the mark. You're not working with forgiveness when you say, I pardon you, I forgive you for what's going on inside of me. And it's such an important concept to get across, and yet for so long we've been so brainwashed with this idea of letting each other off the hook that it's hard to have a conversation that sticks. Even when people hear, okay, forgiveness means remove. Forgiveness means if I'm in pain, if I'm in turmoil, or I'm in trauma, there is a tool, there is a technology to go inside myself and remove my pain, my turmoil, or my trauma. And when I'm in that pain, turmoil, or trauma, if I know how to apply actual first century Aramaic forgiveness, then what I do is I drop into the hidden part of my mind, and of course, psychology tells us that probably as much as 95% or more of our psychological processes or mental processes are unconscious. So a whole lot going on in there that nobody has a clue about, nobody ever touches into until they enter into forgiveness. And then when you enter into forgiveness, you start to touch into the parts of your mind in need of healing. And that is any part of your mind that goes against you experiencing yourself as a human being. And we have a very specific definition of a human being: hold a newborn child. If you hold a newborn, you know exactly what a human life is. It is this awesome act of presence of love that we are each designed to experience and express as. Forgiveness, when you're not experiencing or expressing as love, is how to go inside yourself and remove the insanity. If you're always letting other people off the hook for your insanity, however, you never go inside yourself. You never look. It doesn't change. And we end up getting stuck there. So our task is to offer this technology with which you can literally remove everything that ever happened to you, everything that does not belong within your structure. And it's an absolutely amazing thing when you start to really, truly experience yourself as that awesome presence of love. So we're delighted and honored that you're here to join us. And let's say hello to Dr. Tim. Tim, how do you be today, sir?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Awesome.
My input.
What's exciting in your world?
Well, my input for today is that yesterday I had the opportunity to share with two different teenagers the PowerPoint presentation by Bill Costantino that is just a lovely, lovely introduction to the core process and helps deepen people's understanding of the forgiveness process. And I am very happy to say that both teenagers got it and had good questions and then had questions that revealed how deeply they were getting it. And so, in my work, I have the opportunity to work with all kinds of people from very, very healthy and stable to not so much so. And for one of the teenagers yesterday, he came in and told yet another story of his parents who are now divorced, yelling, swearing, name-calling, horrible names, the kinds of names that you wouldn't ever want to hear have anybody called. And he's there witnessing his parents doing this to each other or at each other. And so I felt blessed to be able to be there to give him the opportunity to start considering that that's his heritage, and unless he actively works to change it, that's how he's going to treat the people that he says he loves later in life and the people that he gets into relationships with. And then because I've had several sessions with him and we have laid the foundation for it, I showed him the video about canceling the goal and used several examples of, by stopping the video and talking about, now here's the situation, here's the goal your mom had for your dad, here's the goal your dad had for your mom, if they'd canceled that and gone inside, et cetera. It was lovely. And it's just wonderful to have that tool to be able to actively use it in a session with people. So if you haven't seen that video yet, whyagain.org. It's right there on the front page, and it's just fabulous. So that's my input for today.
Excuse me, I was mute challenged there for a minute, Tim, but I hear you, and it certainly warms the cockles of my heart to hear that a young person, the turnaround that a young person's going to make. I think back to the insanity in my life, and if I'd have been a teenager and had this understanding, oh my God, how different would the game have been? So that's just fabulous, especially a kid who's been exposed to that kind of viciousness and violence, and perhaps, had come to think that it was normal, which it certainly is not, It's just yay, 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 and triple yay. It's awesome to do that. And, you know, nobody needs to be an expert to do exactly what you just did. In fact, nobody needs to even know anything about the work. Nobody needs to ever have done a worksheet in order to introduce these tools to people and to share exactly what you shared. You know, just invite people to go to whyagain.org. There's a bullseye in the middle of the page. Just to the right of the bullseye, there is a link, a PowerPoint link. And just, you know, send people there, take people there, show it to them, and you'll be changing lives. And you don't need to know anything about the work. You don't need to do anything. Maybe you've never done a worksheet yourself. But if you got somebody that's in trauma, especially a young person, and you can hand them that tool, what an awesome gift you've given. It's just amazing, amazing, amazing. So very cool. Thank you, sir. Thank you, thank you. Humanity is brightened by every person who touches into the tools and puts them to work in their lives. So accolades and congratulations. And Jeannie tells us that we have a caller online. So let's go to our caller.
We actually have two callers. I think the first one is Miss Julie here at Heartland 417. You're on the air.
Awesome, young lady. How do you be?
Are you there?
I'm here. Are you there?
I am. I'm charging my phone.
What's on your mind today?
Well, I was just liking you to elaborate on the importance of locating the goal that is the driver for the output of the mind and then being able to cancel that goal. As I recall, my education with you is to be as specific as you can to find that goal that is the driver and then to write that driver down and then to be able to cancel the goal and just why that you want that to happen. Am I clear?
You're clear. Good point. Good question. Right on track. And I think that's something that we could talk about once again. And anybody can listen to this set of ideas 100 times and still get more out of it. So if you've listened to the show before and you say to yourself, you know, I've heard this before, I don't need to do this again, we really invite you to just listen and stay with it because there are so many nuances. I'll tell you that in order to explain this, and Julie, you know this very well, back in the early days, I promoted canceling goals. I promoted this idea of forgiveness without knowing how or why it worked. And you know how many decades it took for me to come to understand it, to make my mind available to be taught that. So maybe you could say a little bit about that before I actually go into talking about the why and how of it. Are you there, Julie?
Oh, me or Jeannie?
You, Julie, you've been around since, you know, the very early days. Let's see, you tapped in about probably 27, 28 years ago, and I started working on this 35 years ago. So you came in at about the 7-year point, and of course, in the first workshop, heard me talking about canceling goals. But what's your recollection of how that was explained, why anybody would want to do such a silly thing? And I'd just like to give people, seeing as how you're here, I'd love for people to have a little bit of the history of it.
I'm not 100% sure that I can give you the history of it, but I can only say that I have been evolving in my understanding of it. So I know when I first started out, I didn't totally understand what I was doing. I was just kind of doing it on faith. And as you kept talking about it, you know, the more I attended class, the more I understood it. So as I see you evolving, I guess I'm evolving also. But, you know, when you were when you speak now, you are very specific about, you know, what it does. And I think in the early years, you were not near as specific. But I think now you are, and the importance of how this driver, you know, is got to be canceled, because goals have to either be achieved or canceled, or the individual is still under stress. And so my perception is, of course, I can only project onto you, and that would be that I've been evolving, because in the beginning, I didn't totally understand it, and I keep working on understanding it. And as you understand it, I understand it better. So I think that would be the best explanation we could give you right now.
Okay, well, let's understand it together. So in the early days of teaching the first century Aramaic forgiveness process, we had no idea why or how it worked. You know, Dan originally came up, Dan McDougald, who was my co-author of Laws of Living, had no idea of the why and how of it. We just knew that if you canceled your goals, then things in your life changed. And so I sort of haphazardly taught that initially, not knowing the why or how of it, but I would have people who would come to me and say, you know, my life has changed since I started canceling goals, and I don't understand why it works. And I would say, well, I don't understand either. In fact, I haven't really done it because I just sort of ran into it, and, you know, I would occasionally share the idea with somebody. And what happened is people would come back to me and say, Michael, that goal canceling stuff is really powerful. Where did you come up with that? It's like, well, that's actually the meaning of the word forgive in Aramaic. It's the word is shabag or shabak, and it means to cancel. And so as people would come back and tell me how powerfully that impacted them, I became more and more interested and more focused. Maybe somebody, if that was somebody who just caught, maybe you could just mute your phone. I became more and more interested in why and how that worked. And for years, taught that if you have a goal and you cancel that goal, you'll start to heal the parts of your mind that are hidden from you. And over a period of 30 years, I finally came to understand, by putting together several pieces of technology, you know, from Marcel Vogel, 23-year senior scientist from IBM, who had the instrumentation in the lab with which to take a picture of the high-energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought, I started to understand how we resonate or draw people into our lives according to the goals that we hold and the energies that we radiate from ourselves. And then the Harvard research that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, there's a maximum 9 bits of data that goes into conscious awareness. So 10,000 brain cells, 9 bits isn't very much. In fact, it's less than the 5% that most estimate is a psychological estimate of how much of our thinking processes, or so-called thinking, how much of our mental process is unconscious. And what I was finally taught, and, you know, I really appreciate the fact that in the Aramaic there is a power that Yeshua spoke about 2,000 years ago that he called Ruach HaKodesh. The Greeks translate it as the Holy Spirit, but there's no such concept in the Aramaic as the disembodied spirit being. Just that there is this actual feminine elemental force in us that when we invite her into activity, will undo the effects of our errors and teach us the truth. And so over the decades, as I was able to listen to that power and get instruction, and I would have things as specific as word changes in my teaching explained to me in that quiet space inside my head, literally. No, Michael, it's not this, it's this. Oh, okay, thank you. So that power exists. There is no question about it. Now, if we've never stopped to listen, if we deny it, if we don't want to have anything to do with it, if we want to pretend it isn't there, then it won't be there for us. But that won't, or pardon me, it won't be active in us, but that won't mean it isn't there. So what I finally have come to understand over 35 years of teaching this is that the thing that determines or recruits information from all of the data in our minds in order to assist us in achieving the goals that we hold, the thing that recruits that data is our goals. So when I set a goal, I literally create a stress, and when I create that stress, the functioning purpose of my mind is to give me information on how to do a behavior that will reduce my stress. So let's say, for instance, I want to hang a picture. So I say, there's the picture, there's the place on the wall it needs to go, I'm going to hang the picture. All of a sudden, I've created a stress. My mind goes to work and says, where are the hammers? Where are the nails? Where are the hangers? Oh, no hangers here. You want a specific kind of hanger? You're going to have to go into town to the hardware store. Okay? So my mind just gave me a set of instructions on a behavior to do to help me to achieve my goal. So now I'm under stress. And under that stress, what do? I go out and I start the car. I drive into town. I get the hangers. I come back. And then I go, this is kind of a weird hanger. How do I do this? Oh, I want to hang the picture using this picture hanger. Now my mind says, well, the only way you're going to do that, Michael, is if you know how to use it. So read the instructions. So now my mind gives me instructions on how to achieve my goal. Now I've got the instructions, and I need a specific kind of screwdriver. So I set a goal to go get the screwdriver. And if... I need this very specific kind of screwdriver, and I know I've got one somewhere. Now, the database in my mind, in response to that goal, is stressed, and it has and cycles information. Well, let's see now. The last time I saw it, it was in the van. No, I loaned it to Bill. Oh, yeah, and Bill said he gave it to Charlie. So now my mind's going through all the data that it's got that will empower me to get the specific screwdriver that I need to hang this picture. Notice I haven't hung the picture yet, so I'm under stress. Now, let's imagine that I realize that, Bill gave it to Hortense. And, I've had a lot of rage in my relationship with Hortense. And all of a sudden, what does my mind do? Oh, Hortense, she probably threw it out. She destroys things. She doesn't take care of things. Man, I can just work myself into a rage. And I turn around to pick up the phone to call Hortense, and there's a screwdriver laying on the counter. All of a sudden, my stress is relieved. And I realize that I have anger at Hortense. Now, here's where forgiveness comes in. When I realize that my goal, the thing that causes my mind to recruit rage toward Hortense, is all the times when she didn't take care of things, then the way that I clean up, and this is where the specificity comes in. I don't think I quite pronounced that correctly. The specificity. You know what I mean. This is where that specific goal comes in. Oh, I have a goal for Hortense to take care of things. And now that I see I've got rage about that, I've got anger about that, I've got frustration about that, whatever it happens to be, when I cancel the goal, forgive, what happens is the projection from my brain cells that hold anger toward Hortense and build a picture in my mind of Hortense deserving my anger, when I cancel the goal, the specific goal for her to take care of things, my projection, my picture of her collapses. When it collapses in on itself, I get to drop into that part of my mind where I hold that anger, and I may go back to finding out that, when I was 4 and I didn't take care of Dad's new, camera that he laid on the counter and I picked up and decided to play with it and broke it and I got a beating for it, then I find out that my rage at Hortense is about the beating that I got when I was 4. And now that I've uncovered that, I can breathe, I can forgive, and I can remove that anger. And I'm going to be freed of that dynamic in my mind, and I'm going to have a much better chance of doing a great job of hanging this picture, which was my original goal. And so now I found the screwdriver, I've got the part, I know exactly where the picture's going to go. Well, actually, I'm not sure whether it should go higher or lower. You know, I think I'll get a third opinion. And so I'm going to call Jeannie and say, Jeannie, you know, I had talked to Bill about where to hang this picture, and I'd like your help. And so I'm going to hold it up, and you tell me if you think it looks better here or there. And I get that information from Jeannie. Now, why did I go and get Jeannie? Because I set a goal to have a third opinion. I already had Bill's opinion. I knew what I thought, but I wanted a third opinion. So when I wanted a third opinion, my mind prompted me to do a behavior to alleviate that stress. The only purpose of the human mind is to give you behaviors with which to alleviate your stress. If when your mind is attempting to show you behaviors with which to alleviate your stress, there is hostility or fear in your mind, then your mind will be totally incapable of showing you how to reduce your stress. You will always do behaviors out of hostility or fear that will tend to increase your stress. And so by forgiving, by canceling the goal that drives the frustration, I get to drop directly into the root of the frustration, and I get to be freed of it. So forgiveness is about being free of or removing influences from my mind that never belonged there. And if you hold a newborn child and you tap into this awesome active presence of love, our thesis is that nothing other than the active presence of love belongs in the human system. Frustration, fear, hatred, vengeance, none of those things belong. But we each have them from generations and generations and generations in an insane world that teaches us that those things are good and righteous. And so each time I find myself with something that compromises my ability to reduce my stress, I cancel my goal, I collapse the picture that comes from the stress of that goal, and I get to see what's beneath it that holds hostility or fear, and then I get to reset the goal, and I get to have wonderful stress, exactly the kind of stress that shows me how to achieve exactly what I want. And you know, there's one of the two-hour DVD called Getting the Stress You Need. Stress is an absolutely necessary thing in life. Without it, you'd be dead. You want stress. But what you want is stress that's based in love and constructive behavior rather than stress based in hostility or fear. So in essence, that's why you cancel a goal. Does that reach to what you were looking for, Julie?
Hold on, I have to turn it back on. I had turned everybody off to quieten all the noise. So sorry,
okay.
You're back on.
Fabulous.
So Julie, did that kind of get to the core of what you were looking for?
Yes, it was fabulous. A really, really excellent explanation.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Thank you very much.
We're getting to do our job. Anything else we can do that you think might be useful for anybody that's listening or any way we can support you today?
Oh, that was excellent. You did a really great job because you put in a variety of things. And I like the way you presented this. It was very, very good. Really. Thank you very much.
And I got a picture hung at the same time. It was cool.
Yeah, great. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, awesome. Great question. Julie, I love it when you put your thinking cap on and come up with questions like that, because with all the work you've done and the people that you're working with on a private one-to-one basis, you know, refining those questions and then presenting them to the show gives us an opportunity to share it with the whole audience and to get it into the archive so that it's preserved forever for eternity. Anybody that wants to go and listen to these archives is going to be able to get that information. So that's awesome. And we appreciate you keeping your thinking cap on and coming up with questions, thoughts, even tricky questions that can help us to refine this understanding. And so much appreciation for you doing that.
You are very welcome. And I really like this explanation. There goes my expressing myself. It was really a nice journey. You know, I really think people could relate to it. So thank you very much.
Delighted, young lady. Much appreciation.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, have an awesome day. All right, 646-200-4169. Dr. Kim, do you have anything you'd like to be thinking to add of in the nuances of forgiveness that you've learned in working with people?
Well, I have to agree with Julie that that was a very nice presentation. And I think the thing that I do routinely, because I've learned it from you and do it in the support groups, I don't do it every time, but routinely when we get to the canceling the goal and people say, you know, well, that's weird. You spent 5 minutes helping me define the goal and making sure that it lined up with what I was feeling and the thoughts that I was using to create the feeling and what I think happened and who the person is that's a trigger. So we just mapped out this goal that's positively stated and often, you know, loving, because it's going to end up, if that could happen, then it would wipe out everything else. And now you want me to cancel it. Why do you want me to cancel it? And the answer I give is, you know, some of the first answers I ever learned from you about that. The first one is, the other part of the worksheet's helping me lay out over and over again how my experience is completely internal, unique to me, and created out of my own thoughts. So the moment I set a goal for someone or something else to change, the focus of my attention is outside of myself. And if the cause of my upset is inside myself, I've now locked myself away from any possibility of changing. And the next reason is because, well, don't I deserve to have this loving goal that we just structured? And you say, yeah, you do deserve to have that loving goal. And since you're a creator and creating your own experience, why haven't you created it yet? And the only possible explanation for that is that while one part of me at the conscious logical level really wants this goal, some other more powerful and at the moment part of me thinks, I don't deserve that goal. I can't have it. Bad things would happen if I did get it. It would make things worse, et cetera, et cetera. And that's the part of my mind I don't have access to when I'm focused with my conscious logical mind saying, yes, I want this, and I know I want it, and I know this is the only thing that's going to make me happy. So when I cancel that conscious logical part that's holding that goal, it opens a space, an energetic window for me to get access to the hidden part of my mind that's actually keeping me from creating that in my experience. So those are the two things that I often say as we're doing our worksheets in the group. And they're pretty much verbatim from talks I've heard you give.
Cool. Good reminders. And you triggered a memory of one day when Julie from Ashland, Oregon was on the show, and she came up with a concept that I've used many times since, and that was, what are we energetically devoted to? And, you know, sometimes people just love their hostility and fear, and they are energetically devoted to that, and so they bring that about again and again and again by sometimes setting unachievable goals or going about the achieving of a goal in a way that makes it silly to really think you could possibly achieve it. And it is because of their energetic devotion to hate, to rage, to guilt, to fear, to sadness, that they get stuck in that process, or their energetic devotion to being right or controlling others or telling others how they should run their lives, like, you know, take a look at how your own is going before you tell somebody else how to run their lives. But there's just all kinds of energetic devotions that people have in order to, in many cases, I think, keep the focus off themselves. And what this going inside and looking at the goals we hold and canceling them does is it takes us right back to the core of where our feelings, our upset, our disturbance comes from. And, you know, it is just the most awesome piece of technology, which I have never seen anywhere else on the planet. There are millions of people talking all the time about forgiveness. But I can remember in the early days when I was looking, that I looked probably 10, 15 years asking that question. how do you forgive? And I'd run into people who were talking about forgiveness, and they'd just say, well, you know, you just forgive. And I'd say, well, I don't know how. That's why I'm asking. How do you forgive? Well, you just forgive. Excuse me. I don't know how. How do you do it? I couldn't find anybody that knew. And then I came across this Aramaic idea of canceling the goal. And there's the core of it. And it's the toughest piece to understand, and I certainly comprehend why it was lost to the planet 2,000 years ago, because until you have that whole understanding of how the mind works, as I say, it took me 30 years to come to be able to comprehend it, and now, in a very simple way, explain it. And as you say, that PowerPoint presentation, if you haven't looked at it, and this explanation that I just gave makes sense for you, then go to www.whyagain.org, and if you scroll down the page, you'll see a bullseye in the middle of the page. Just to the right of that bullseye, there's a link to a video of a PowerPoint that Bill Costantino created, and it is absolutely awesome and puts it together in such a precise way. Thank you, Bill, for your skills in creating PowerPoints and putting that together for us. It's fabulous. And so beyond that, let's just check in with Jeannie and see if she has any input on the whole process of forgiveness from her work, especially in, you know, doing the Healing the Whole Woman workshop and such. Any additions, Jeannie, before we check in on callers? I know you've got one or two on the
refinements. No, I explained it pretty well. I've actually got two callers, so I'd say let's
take
that caller. The first one's, their numbers are really close. The first one is 718. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hey there. Welcome.
Hi.
Give us a name. Where are you calling from?
My name is Mindy, and I'm calling from New York. And I'm listening
Welcome.
To this.
Glad to hear your voice, Mindy.
Yeah, this a little complicated and a little very deep, a little long-winded, and I love it like candy. But, unfortunately, I have to run out. So, I want to make points on everything you said. I had a near-death experience 2 years ago, and although I always loved psychology, and I did study lots of metaphysics until I learned, like, church, and then I got scared of that, but after the near-death, you know, that goes away. Anyhow, what I wanted to say was about the forgiveness. When I was on the other side, they told me one of the things, your life will go in the direction of your thoughts. And then, they said, and it can't be based on your circumstances. That was the kicker.
You got it. They were right on with that one.
The whole thing is about taking personal responsibility. So on the main point that you were saying, since I came back, I realized certain things like, how come nobody cleaned this kitchen? Then I start thinking, wait a minute. Meaning my, you know, teenage kids. They're not thinking that way. Yes, they should be more respectful, blah, 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 blah. But my expectations of what they should be doing, that was the problem. I could do all the things without the aggravation. In other words, I would have to keep looking back into me. Where am I, just what you're saying, where am I creating the aggravation? But the canceling of a goal, what if it's a big goal and, like, I've been wanting to move for like a year already, and I can't seem to get it off the ground for some reason, even though I put my house up and then I took it off. I visit the place 6 times. Like, I did a lot of things. I'm still open. I'm happy anyway because that's a choice. I learned that. But I don't want to cancel that goal. I canceled the fear about it, the expectations, all those things. But the goal itself, explain that, please, to me.
Okay. Well, here's my input. First of all, I don't think you had a near-death experience. I think you had a near-life experience.
Definitely.
The world does just about everything backward. Mm-hmm. You know, my experience is that the average person by the age of 4 is already dead to who they are, the mm-hmm. truth of who they are. And then 10, 20, 30, 50 years later, people experience clinical death, and now they have a near-life experience. They have the opportunity to experience the truth about who they are and get some new instructions, come back and start teaching their minds about it. And you're right on. If any person, circumstance, activity changes the way you're experiencing your world, then, and it changes it in a negative direction or appears to change it in a negative direction, then you've got an internal challenge that mm-hmm. can be forgiven. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as the goal to move, my input would be that there are probably at least 2,000 things that you'll have to do in order to get into your new house. So you really wouldn't want to have a goal to move. You'd want to have a plan to move.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't know it from the way that the Greeks translated, but if you go back 2,000 years ago, you'll hear this man, Yeshua, first century Aramaic thought system, and the Greeks tell us that he said, sufficient for the day are the evils thereof. And you go, what the heck does that mean? Sufficient for the day are the evils that, like, how does that make any sense? You wouldn't know that what he was teaching people 2,000 years ago was stress management.
Mm-hmm.
So when we set a goal, we create a stress. And what he was saying was, the word evil in Aramaic has two different translations, at least two different distinct translations. One of the translations relates to the word sin. And in Aramaic, sin is an archery term. When you fire at the bullseye and you miss the bullseye, the scorekeeper would yell sin. You're off the mark. That's all the word sin means. The word evil relating to that is, if I shoot at the bullseye and I miss the target altogether, then the scorekeeper would yell evil. You're like just so far off that you missed the target altogether. That's one translation. The second translation of the word evil is unripened or incomplete. So if I look at a green apple that's going to turn into a beautiful red delicious apple one day, I would properly say in Aramaic that apple is evil. Not that there's anything wrong with it. It's not finished yet. It's in a state of becoming. It's not ripe yet.
Mm-hmm.
So when Yeshua says, if you hear him correctly in the first century context, he's saying, don't have any goals for anything beyond the next waking period. And that way, you'll keep your stress at the most manageable levels. So if I have a goal to move, well, God, I got to list my house, I got to sell my house, I got to set the price, I got to paint the, I got to fix the steps, I got 8 billion things on my mind, and now I'm so overstressed, I'll probably go into procrastination and quit.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a plan, and then I start laying my plan out. Well, it might take me 6 months to move, because I know I've got those steps to fix. I need to paint the inside, I need to paint the outside, I need to fix the gutters. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to set up and, set goal or frame goals only for what I'm going to do tomorrow. And what I'm going to do tomorrow is I'm going to call the realtor. I'm going to find out about listing it. And I can do that tomorrow. And I'm going to make a phone call to the guy who does gutters to come by and give me a price. And I'm going to do some research online for what kind of paint I want to use to paint the outside of the house. So there are things that I can do tomorrow. Before I go to sleep tonight, I would frame those things as possible goals. And then, before I go to sleep, and we've actually got a worksheet on our website that you can download. If you go to whyagain.org and you click on the bullseye we've been talking about, you may have to scroll down the page a little bit. Click on the bullseye and go down through the list, and you'll see a worksheet called Mind Goal Management. Download that, and it gives you a framework for framing goals. And this is something we go into in detail in the workshop, Getting the Stress You Need. There's a DVD available on the website that you can order. But the worksheet's pretty much, it's kind of self-explanatory, or you're certainly welcome to call the show and ask questions about it. But I frame the goal, and then before I go to sleep, I just ask, okay, Ruka, which speaks to that internal power in me, do you have any guidance on this? Is there anything I need to know about? And so I set it aside, now I go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
I wake up in the morning, I pull my goal sheet out, or my framed goal, and I look at it, and I go, oh, yeah, what kind of paint? And then I realize, oh, yeah, when I was in that dream state, I had this idea come to me that such and such a company had a new kind of paint. I wonder if that's true. Well, I'm going to make a note of that, and I'm going to call them. And sure enough, I call them, and my intuitive sense in my dream told me where to go to get the right kind of paint. That's why you frame goals the night before you go to sleep and ask for guidance. So I call that company. I order the paint. I call the guy about the gutters, and I call the real estate agent, and I set up the listing. So I created stresses that I can achieve today. I complete those stresses, and then I look tomorrow at, okay, what am I going to do tomorrow that's going to carry out the plan that in 6 months I'll have sold my house and I'll have found another house? And that way, I haven't set up this huge dynamic that just overwhelms me. I'm going to move in 6 months, and I'm trying to hold that goal today. I break it down into bite-sized chunks, and I work through it. If I find that, you know, let's say I've got the goal to call the realtor, and I find myself hesitating and kind of, you know, backing away from calling the realtor, and I feel kind of funny about it. It's like, what's going on here? That's where I'd pick up reality management worksheet, the forgiveness worksheet, and I'd put on the worksheet, you know, that my goal is to call the realtor. And I'm going to cancel that goal, and as I go through the worksheet process, what I might find was that, I might go back to a memory of being 4 years old and hearing my dad rant and rave about how a realtor ripped him off and he lost, you know, a home. And that, in my unconscious, becomes a block to me being able to find the right realtor and get the house listed and get it sold. So if I listen to my mind and I plan things out properly and I notice that, you know, there's some fear about this calling a realtor thing, I can go in, clear that fear, and then, in a clear mind, get the right realtor. Just bang, I'll have the guidance to do that. So that's how the workshop, Getting the Stress You Need, would put it together for you, and that Mind Goal Management Sheet, of course, is downloaded free from the website.
Thank you.
Hey, delighted. Thank you for the questions.
Thank you.
All right, glad to be of support, and let us know how the moving's going as time unfolds.
Yes, I will.
By the way, with the forgiveness process, you know, we suggested, you know, to the right of the bullseye, there's a link to a video of a PowerPoint presentation that explains the whole forgiveness process. Once you've watched that, you can back up to the bullseye, click on that, and the second link that opens when you click on the bullseye will give you the actual worksheet process step by step for forgiveness. And then the third link will give you access to 16 different radio shows where we've walked somebody step by step. So there's 16 different sets of free custom instructions on how to engage and use that worksheet. So that's where you'll find that information. And as you're doing it, if any questions come up, we're delighted to have you call and to be of support in carrying it forward.
Thank you so much.
All right, and thanks for sharing your near-life experience with us. It's awesome when you have one of those, isn't it?
Oh, it's the best. It's the best.
Yeah, pretty sweet.
I wonder what I would be if I didn't have it, you know?
I understand.
Yeah.
Well, and what happens when you engage in the forgiveness process is each time you forgive, you have a micro near-life experience.
You're right. But I was a little bit blessed because they told me on the other side to forgive. They showed me examples and certain things. So that gave me a really big head start because when you're
awesome.
Told direct things, it kind of
mm-hmm.
made it like more important for me to do it. And I was for the first time.
I hear you.
Too.
I hear you loud and clear.
Yeah. So,
very cool. Thank you for your call, and you have a blessed day.
Do you have any in-person classes? I just want to ask briefly.
Oh, yeah. Actually, Jeannie and I generally travel 6 to 10 months of the year all over the globe. If you keep an eye on our schedule, we're going to be limited in this year because we're doing some new writing work. And so we're going to be limited in what we'll be doing. But you can keep a look on our schedule on the website. And we also do residential intensives. We just finished our summer season here at Heartland. And we're looking at perhaps doing an intensive or two this season And I'm not sure exactly what that's going to be yet. It's looking like it might be a codependence communication practicum. Will probably be a 16-day residential intensive. And so if you just keep an eye on our schedule, or if you want to drop an email to Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org, and give us your mailing address, we'll put you on the schedule, on the mailing list, and that'll keep you posted on what we're doing.
Okay, great.
All right. Have an awesome one. Blessings. Thanks for your call.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. So, Jeannie, you've got another call for us?
It's area code 781. You're on the air.
Okay.
Hi, Michael and Jeannie.
781.
Ron from Massachusetts.
Hey, young man, good to hear your voice.
It's good to be heard.
By the way, I noticed a little event happened on, and you've been on my list to call. Things have been a little crazy with finishing the intensives off and getting back from Springfield, but I noticed there was a little event that happened, actually a fairly significant event that happened on our PayPal account, and thank you for that donation and support. You're much appreciated.
Oh, it's an honor. Thank you. And you're welcome too. Now I'm looking at the clock nervously. I have a lot of stuff right now about this phone call. I hope you can, I don't know if you can tap into my energy, but first I'd like to say that the last 2 days of calls have been spectacular. And I tried to download I think the MP3 is corrupted from yesterday's call. I could listen to it online. But I would ask maybe to take a look at the MP3 if it, because I had trouble with that from yesterday's call because it was so powerful. And today, again. And what I want to first tell you, Mom is thriving. She played golf over the weekend. She's been juicing every day. And Mom's just
really awesome. Thriving.
Yep. She's really, it's just amazing what's happened with her. And I have been doing a lot of work, as you might guess, and you know, over the years, well, I have listened, I've watched in its entirety the codependence to interdependence, the two-hour video. I've watched that every day for the last 7 days. And that was not something that I set out to do. It was just something that happened. And on Thursday of last week, I had it's pretty funny that today you were talking about the history and the evolving understanding of the work, because on Thursday I had a very memorable, it's still with me now, so I'm calling you to discuss it with you, an intuitive event, at least I think it was an intuitive event, where it dealt with the concepts of Rachma and Kubba, the Aramaic words for the love filters, Rachma being a love filter over the pool of intentions in the mind, and Kubba being the love filter over the pool of perceptions in the mind. What occurred, as I listened to you talk, one of the things that you say is, when you talk about the scriptures, Michael, you talk about how before Freud rediscovered the unconscious, it was hard for us to even interpret the word, the phrase, take care of the heart, for out of it are the issues of life, because we didn't really have a language for the unconscious until Freud came along and
right.
reinterpreted that. Well, in the 70s, there was a series of strategies developed called NLP, Neuro-Linguistic Programming, and as you know, I've been building brain cells with you for about a little over 17 years, and I've been building brain cells around NLP for 22 years, and what came to me on Thursday, and what NLP does is it breaks down, it looks at the structure of how we perceive, how we represent or represent our world in our mind. So like the what we paint on the inside of our eyeballs, it looks at that from a structural perspective, how we paint it. And in the same way that some people are left-handed and some people are right-handed, some people are internally based and some people are externally based. And so you talk about this concept, Michael, when in the workshop you do called On Creating Consciously, where you say, you walk through a meditation, a meditative process where you say, you're in poverty, you're in a regular environment, and you're in opulence. Now your family comes to see you, and then they leave. And then when they leave, what are you feeling? What are you thinking? What are you saying to yourself? That would be internal. And then as they drive away, what's your family saying? What are they thinking? That would be external. And what came to me on Thursday is that Rachma and Kuba are internal and external. That, and you said that you talked about this yesterday with the test from the Course in Miracles, where you talked about the test is when I think of someone else, am I in a state of perfect peace? That would be Rachma. And when someone else thinks of me, are they in perfect peace? And that would be Kuba. And so this kind of, in the same way that I'm wondering, is in the same way if before Freud reinterpreted rediscovered the unconscious, it was hard to interpret that word, take care of the heart. I'm wondering if it's been challenging to interpret Rachma and Kuba prior to the study of how attention flows, how we see the world through our own eyes and how we imagine people are seeing it through theirs. So Rachma would be a filter over how I'm looking out in the world, and Kuba would be a filter over how I imagine that people are looking at me, the world looking in at me. And so that's what's been going on. That's what happened for me on Thursday, and I'd love to hear your thoughts about it.
Well, it sounds like you're delving into a whole other depth of your work, which is always pretty cool and pretty sweet. So congratulations on that. And
thank you.
You know, our internal perception, actually, if you look back in the scriptures where they said perfect love casts out fear,
mm-hmm.
they were actually talking about those two filters, which are both internal to the mind, the first one being Rachma over intentions and Kuba over perceptions, and that when those two filters are set, even though something terrible and disastrous might be happening in the outer world, the mind cannot produce a fear-based reality.
Yes.
It will always see more clearly what possibilities are. I would kind of question that Kuba is about the external, because it's still, the flip.
Uh-oh.
Oh, my alarm just went off and told me that we've only got about a minute or so left. So, say again?
Oh, I wanted to just quickly say that the Kuba would be internal, but it would be my imagination of what I think. But what I love that you brought up the perfect love, because when I was trying to explain this to my wife, Sabrina, it dawned on me that when I first saw you speak at the Unity of Fairfax in Virginia, I lit up like a Christmas tree when you talked about perfect love. And I asked you, I said, what is that? What does that mean? And you explained it in terms of these filters. So it's something near and dear to my heart. And whether or not this is accurate or just an evolving piece of work for me, I'm at peace with either.
Cool. Well, my invitation would be, because our timing is short, is that maybe early in the show tomorrow, if you could, call back in and let's continue this conversation. I have some other thoughts I'd like to share, and it would be interesting to see where it goes from what you're working with. So if you can do that tomorrow, let's do it.
Thank you, Michael.
Hi, Ron. Blessings and love. Say hi to Sabrina and Grace for us, and we hold you in a blessing. And everybody, tomorrow, give the world the best gift you can possibly give. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. Bye-bye.